On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, Tyrese Haliburton is sidelined for at least the next few weeks. What you need to know about his injury and why it was the best case outcome, all things considered, with athletic trainer Jeff Stotts, who has been tracking NBA injuries for more than a decade.
I know that Fieldhouse Files has a prolific following. You know, I just want to be careful about sharing too much with the world.
And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Hello, Pacer fans. It's been a roller coaster of the last month, hasn't it? It was a month ago, last time when we were in Vegas and the Pacers had reached the finals of the in-season tournament, losing to the Lakers, but still it was a tremendous accomplishment for a team that certainly was not expected to even have that much success in that tournament. But they left tired and worn down, but proud of what they had achieved and having surprised everyone. But then they lost six of their next eight games. They fell back to even, 14-14. And since that point, though, they have won eight of their last nine games, including Wednesday over the Wizards, to go 4-1 on a homestand. That's really strong, really good, considering four of those six games were pairs of games against the powers in the East, Boston and Milwaukee. The pivot point for this franchise thus far this season has been Tuesday, December 19th. Easy for me to remember because it's my half birthday, all right? Nonetheless, it was their first practice in 3 weeks. Yes, we're at a point right now, you should know, where the team really does not have much practice time. Maybe occasionally, maybe even more so coming up because you're on the road, although actually probably not because they have two pairs of back-to-backs. So that complicates things. But there's really not a lot of practice time. They will hold shoot-arounds on game days on the road and at home games to make things easier, especially for the players that live up north, 30, 40 minutes away. They come in just once rather than, you know, having a 10 a.m. shoot-around. Guys then drive back home, then drive back before the game. That usually starts at 2:30, 3 o'clock with a walkthrough. But nonetheless, let's go back to that December 19th practice. They had just gotten beaten down by the LA Clippers, who, by the way, are playing very, very well. Call it the Daniel Tice effect. At least I will, maybe. A little bit in jest there. But they have been crushing since about the time Daniel joined the roster. That was about a week after James Harden joined that roster, by the way. But maybe they have figured it out a little bit, and then they got the big news, by the way, that Kawhi Leonard re-signed with the team on a three-year deal on Wednesday. That's beside the point. After the Clippers handled the Pacers, and keep in mind, the Clippers have several of those wings that the Pacers do not, therefore it wasn't all too surprising. Nonetheless, they got back to business at the St. Vincent Center and had a practice that was needed, necessary, tough love, a heart-to-heart. And it's ultimately where this practice served as a reset for the team. More than anything, they made changes to the areas in which they had emphasized in training camp and leading into camp, talking about the defensive principles, talking about how in which they guard pick and rolls, how they defend the three-point line. And they've changed that up a little bit, plus ways in which they would attack other teams. And Carlisle reinforced during that practice and since then as well, again, that those who earned it would play. Minutes would not just be given. Starters were not guaranteed. The key for this season, a theme for this season, would continue to be earn it. So yeah, 8-1 since Christmas is what they've been able to do. They'll take that and look to add to it on a six-game road trip that begins in Atlanta on Friday and then head out west. It's a very bizarre West Coast trip in that they start out east with one game against Atlanta and then head out. And I'll tell you what, those next two games are seemingly two of the toughest. Forget even the opponent. Yes, it's Denver, it's Jokic, who they haven't, and really the league hadn't had an answer for. But it's also a back-to-back in the high elevation and cities where the Pacers have not had great success. I'm talking Sunday at Denver, Monday at Salt Lake City. So those are of note. Then the return game. Thursday, and by the way, that's a weird thing in that they're going to have several days between games, talking about Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they play Thursday in Sacramento. No Tyrese Haliburton on that trip because of this injury, but it is the Buddy Hield return game. Those two left with very different feelings. Buddy fans were happy to see go. With Buddy, they still take it out on him. They still boo him when he comes back. It's different, though, with Tyrese Haliburton. They love him, miss him, but they, I think, understood the move, and it really continues to seemingly work out for both franchises. But the significant news this week was what happened on Monday when Tyrese Haliburton went down. It was a scary scene. It was on the south basket at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, the same basket where Victor Oladipo went down. And we all thought it would be worse, much, much worse, because he lost his footing. His shoes gave out on him. He kind of slid on the side of him. It was very bizarre. Did the splits, grimaced in pain, and immediately clutched. Then we saw the inside of his left leg. Immediately, I think, this is significant. All right, is it hamstring? Is it groin? Well, it's a hamstring strain. An MRI confirmed that the following day, and the Pacers did not say much in their official announcement. And for the last several years, really, the Pacers have gone away from putting any timeline on any injuries. So that is not unique to this case. It's something as a franchise they went away from for at least a couple of years. Maybe that goes back to 2020 with Victor Oladipo's injury, but that's nothing new. Then Woj added to it that it's a grade one sprain, which then matches up with what Rick Carlisle said, that they had avoided the worst, because a grade one sprain, that keeps you out the least. There's grade one, grade two, grade three. Grade one is certainly an injury, but minor, all things considered. Grade three, on the other end of the spectrum, significant. You're talking, tears, you're talking surgery necessary, and you're talking a season-ending injury there. For this injury being a grade one, as Jeff Stotts will explain, and he'll discuss the specifics and really get into the nuts and bolts of things like this. That's why I love bringing him on and those smarter than me in different departments, because that's where we learn. That's where we can learn about different areas that we aren't experts in, and he'll break it down in so simplistic form. So I appreciate that. But a grade one, you're expecting him to be out at least a couple weeks. Maybe it becomes three. I could see it stretch into four. But Tyrese is going to want to get back quickly. If you're talking about 2 weeks, you're talking roughly five games as the average for a player with this type of injury. And before I get in, though, to my conversation here with Jeff Stotts, I want to detail again what we saw, what we witnessed that night. Because a lot of emotions came pouring out, both from the players and from fans alike. First, I noticed the shoes. I notice them every game, and I should share how Tyrese basically wears a different pair of shoes for every single game. He's at the level now where he gets more product from Nike than he can use himself, right? He's probably sharing his Nike account with friends or close family and friends as well. But these shoes were different. He almost always wears Kobe-type shoes, which is a brand of Nike, just like Jordan brand is. And in this case, though, he was wearing high tops. It goes above his ankle. Normally, he's wearing the low-top standard Kobe shoes that we're all, I think, used to seeing. So that caught my eye. It also caught my eye that this wasn't his first full of the game. No, it was at least his second that I saw. His first one came about 5 minutes into the first quarter. He was driving the other side of the lane line, driving right side, and his feet completely gave out, and he slid under the baseline, and the Celtics, they headed the other way. Okay, that caught my eye, especially from what we saw with the team's court for the tournament. And, of course, as I wrote and shared exclusively on fieldhousefiles.com, the Pacers had that court resurfaced and completely updated it, because that was a problem, and the Pacers addressed it, and they were fortunate to have the time between games, about 3 weeks, so that they could ship the court off to be kind of resurfaced and repainted and corrected. Nonetheless, that's a different concept. The court, there's no issue with, as far as we know. This was something else. Could have just been a rash of bad luck here. But again, then Tyrese went down, 3:10 left in the first half. He was carried off. And I thought it was notable, too, who carried him off. James Johnson and Buddy Hield, who I would argue are his two closest friends on the team. I think that's telling, too, that those guys, especially Buddy here, right, because he's a starter, he's regularly in the rotation, he's often playing. James, on the other hand, he's the 15th man. But Buddy carried along with James, Tyrese back to the locker room, down the tunnel, and in. And on that trip, there was already a towel over Tyrese's face, and I thought it was a nice gesture for a veteran, another veteran, and TJ McConnell to add one more, just to make sure cameras couldn't see him, fans couldn't see his face, because that's a vulnerable position. A lot of emotions came pouring out visually that we could see, and then that informs and is documented forever, right, in our social media, website, TV world. And so I thought that was good on them. And then, as I shared at fieldhousefiles.com, there was a sequence of different individuals going back to the locker room. Remember, this happened right before halftime and just before the start of the second half, after the team had come out, after Ty had talked even with the team at halftime. Still, one of the towels he shared was on his head here. Several individuals went back to the training room. First, it was General Manager Chad Buchanan waiting in that northeast tunnel for his agent, Tyrese's agent, Dave Spahn. He's an IU grad, know him well. And Dave just so happened to be at the game. How about that for a rash of good luck to be able to be there for Ty when he's at his weakest thus far this season, where he likes or anybody would like to have guys that are in their corner that they are closest to there with him. So Buchanan took Spahn back to the locker room, and short while later, a few minutes later, I'm told, his mom, as well as his longtime girlfriend, Jade, also went back to check on Tyrese in the locker room. So there, again, you don't want to assume anything, but all right, maybe this is very serious. If they're bringing everybody back to the locker room to check on him, you don't know exactly what it means, but it certainly is notable. And so those are among the tidbits I shared in my story from that night. But there's still a lot more to get to on this. And the number one thing, too, I should emphasize in that night is how the Pacers didn't get lost in the emotion in that second half. That would have been understandable. That would have been very easy to do. And so not only did they not just win and beat the Celtics, the top team in the East. Yes, they were without Jason Tatum. Okay, whatever. Teams are not at full strength, just like the Pacers weren't without Halliburton. But that Pacers group, excluding Halliburton, came back from a 9-point deficit to beat the Boston Celtics and kind of avenge the loss from two nights earlier. So that was really cool. That was really notable. And I think that speaks to the greater purpose and point of this being a true team. Now to learn more about the Pacers' injuries recently, there's only one call that I had to make. And that was to Jeff Stotts to discuss Halliburton's hamstring, that type of injury, which, by the way, can often linger. And then I also, since I had him, I used that time to ask him about Andrew Nembhard's recent mid-back sprain, Bruce Brown's right knee bone bruise that caused him to miss a couple of weeks. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, as promised, I now bring in the authority of all NBA injuries. That, of course, Jeff Stotts of InStreetClothes.com, because major injury to discuss on the Pacers front, of course, and Tyrese Halliburton. Jeff, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. You know, I hate talking to people because that means somebody's hurt.
I know.
I'm always the harbinger of doom. But I'm happy to educate where I can and maybe bring some optimism to some Pacers fans and let everybody know that maybe it could have been worse.
I think so. And let's just start right there, right away. Couple nights ago, Tyrese Halliburton doing the splits. I think the shoes have a factor. Others do not, apparently, on the internet. I do. He normally wears these low tops. These were different high tops that I haven't seen him in before. Nonetheless, not once, but at least a couple times, he lost his footing. He was driving down the left lane line, did the splits. Ugh. We saw it on his face. And then he immediately clutched at that left thigh, left hamstring injury. Immediately, you could kind of assume, I think, Jeff, groin or hamstring, one or the other here. It came out then that it is indeed a left hamstring strain, grade one, Woj says. What does that mean?
So really it's a best case scenario. And what it boils down to is, so you kind of first have to start and keep in mind that the hamstring is not one muscle. It's a muscle complex. So it's multiple muscles that work together. So the strain that Halliburton has is likely in one of those muscle groups. They didn't specify that. And that's where this gets a little bit tricky.
Sure.
In terms of comparing, because oftentimes it's just listed as a hamstring strain. Sometimes you'll get some very specific details, maybe the exact muscle involved, but overall collectively kind of treat them all the same. The grade one injury means that the fibers of the muscle involved are intact. So there was no tearing of the true muscle fibers. Now, likely what happened is based on the mechanism of injury, that splits action, the fibers that make up the muscle were overstretched but stayed intact. If it was torn, it would have been graded a partial tear would have been graded a grade two. A complete tear would have been a grade three or higher, depending on the amount of fibers torn. So again, best case scenario here. I think when it happened, I originally, put something out that I was hoping for a grade one strain. So I think the fact that that's been semi-confirmed is good news. It does roughly mean the average of confirmed grade one strains in the NBA, according to my database, is about 2 weeks. We're looking at, I think it's somewhere around 5 games, 13 days. So, generally speaking, that's kind of where we look at. It basically doubles if it would have been higher, if it would have been a grade two strain. So we're talking about a multi-week absence, looking at a month maybe, in multiple games. So the fact that they're saying it's a low grade strain is reason for optimism. Surgery is not going to be involved. It just now initiates this very complex, intricate healing process for the muscle group that is going to ultimately dictate not only when he returns, but does he have some kind of aggravation or re-injury?
Yeah, I was thrilled to hear just a grade one. I was surprised, though, you said that doesn't mean any tears. I always assumed, I think it was Will Carroll was saying, like, a strain is a sprain. A sprain is a strain, whatever. It all suggests some kind. Oh, no, it's a sprain is a tear. That's what I think he says. So this does not necessarily mean there is any tears, which is good.
So it's micro tearing, right? Like, I guess that's really what it boils down to, is there is some degree of tearing, but it is not true fibers. If you think of like a fiber optic cable or a rope made of a little smaller, fibers, so maybe some of those microfibers got torn, but for the most part, we're not looking at a complete rupture or complete tear of any true muscle fibers.
Take me inside the Pacers locker room that night when athletic trainers, physical therapists Carl Eaton and Josh Corbeil are looking over him. Is a hamstring injury, obviously you need an MRI to confirm something like this, but can you kind of have a general sense of the severity, like maybe an ACL, right? You can do an ACL check and know if it's intact. How about a hamstring? What would Josh be knowing that night?
You're looking for, if it's a true tear or, even a partial tear, you might get a palpable defect. So like you can feel kind of a break in the musculature. You might see some immediate swelling. You might see some, any kind of other associated symptoms, level of function. Does he have a lot? Can he do the things the hamstring is supposed to do? So the hamstring flexes the knee and extends the hip. And if you can't do those things, okay, now you're thinking potentially a little bit higher. But if he can still do those things and the symptoms are low, you cross your fingers that it is later confirmed that it's a low grade strain. So it's a little bit harder again because of the complexity of the muscle group to
Sure.
just, it's not like that ACL tear where if it's torn, okay, you can feel that it's a tear because there's other synergists that can kind of help do some of those motions as well.
So then now moving forward over the next couple of weeks when he's in the training room, I got to imagine rest is the number one thing, maybe some ice. What type of treatments would he maybe looking at the next couple of weeks, or is it so much just rest, elevation, hydrate?
It's actually a little bit more intensive than that. You would think just resting would be the best. And I do think they're doing things like ice or, any kind of other modality that they're going to use to treat his associated symptoms like swelling and inflammation. But here's the trick is the body doesn't fill those gaps in an organized pattern. It does it kind of haphazardly. All it's caring about is filling in the gaps. Whether that's a true muscle fiber like a grade two, or even that micro damage. It's just trying to repair it. It's important that the athletic training staff, which again, the Pacers, you know me, I speak very highly of them. Their group is fantastic, continually ranks as one of the best.
And so does Ty, by the way. He's a big believer in them as well, which is just as important.
The muscle needs to be loaded in the appropriate manner, because what it's going to do is basically kind of add some structure to the healing process to make sure that the way it's healing is going to be strong and in line with what the demands that Halliburton requires in the game of basketball. So doing things to load the muscle in an appropriate manner that, is going to allow for the area to be conducive to healing, but also do it in, again, a more controlled, appropriate manner. That way, when he does come back, hopefully any potential scar tissue, that kind of stuff, is stronger, more durable, and less likely to be aggravated, less likely to be tear. Because that's what happens is you almost have to have a little bit of restraint with the players, is when those original gaps or the original initial healing occurs, sometimes they functionally feel pretty good. So they, you know, they check some of the boxes and then they go out there and they start to run and it tears, it, you know, or it's weak. So there's another injury somewhere along the kinetic chain. And that's where you have to find this balance of when is the tissue fully healed or as close to fully healed that is going to enable him to play and play at a high level.
What would some of those modalities or types of things to get the appropriate testing load? Are you talking like lifting 5-pound weights and like moving in different directions, or what are some general things you'd suggest there?
Absolutely. You know, so loading in a way, doing movement patterns that are seen present in basketball, loading in a way that's going to be appropriate, gradually building up your weight tolerance, any kind of resistance, you know, doing it in a way that is going to, like I said, be conducive to healing so that he can continue to have full range of motion in the joint, full strength in the joint, but allowing for it to heal.
Last thing on this, and it's something I can observe just as well as anyone else, hamstring injuries are tricky, Jeff, right? Like a guy will come back and then maybe sit out the next game or play good for a week and then it's just not feeling right. Does this kind of go back to what you're saying earlier, is you have to really rely on the athlete to advise you, hey, I may check out all right, but I just don't feel completely right, or it's not recovering quite as fast as I had liked.
Yeah, you know, we always hear about, like, the hamstring injuries are finicky or fickle. But it's always kind of made me laugh, like, describe an injury like that, but it's true. Like, there is a little variability there. One of the risk factors we know for hamstring injuries are previous injury, so he's going to have an increased level of risk moving forward. It's how do we mitigate that risk? What can we do to help minimize that? And they're going to do everything they can to do that. And that is, like you said, where it's extremely valuable to Halliburton, has a lot of respect for that group, where there's good communication because he can be open and honest with them. They're going to give him positive feedback as well. And then, you know, making sure that he's healthy. Does that mean maybe he rests, you know, once he comes back every now and then, sure, you know, but I think they'll make the decision that's best for Tyrese. And then, you know, that they'll be right in line with the franchise as well. So it's a delicate balance. I think it's a group that's capable of doing that for sure.
A couple other things while I have you as the expert, I want to get into a little bit. These are more generic injuries, but I'm confident we can share a little bit with fans about maybe what these players are going through. I start with Tyrese's backup, who's going to be needed more. They're easing him back right now, Jeff, from a mid-back sprain. I know that's very generic, but what kind of, you know, what is Andrew Nembhard battling right now, and how much of that is maybe just the mobileness? I'm thinking a lot of yoga, some stretching is what comes to mind for me with a mid-back sprain. How about you?
Yeah, so the big thing here is, like, while we don't have a ton of information, we do have some, and that's, number one, it's a sprain. So that means it's ligament. It's not a muscle. A muscle is strained. A ligament is sprained. That's back to what you hinted with Will.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Like, sprains and strains are two different injuries. One letter difference, but very different injuries. Because it is a sprain, that means a ligament is involved, which is different than a mid back strain. So it's not muscle related. It's probably some level of stability somewhere around that mid back, and that's the next bit of the information we have. It is mid back. It's not lower back and that lumbar spine. It's in our mid-back, which is likely his thoracic region. So that's where the rib cage connects to the spine. So you've got to remember, your rib cage connects in the front at the sternum, but then those ribs extend all the way back and attach to each one of the vertebrae in the thoracic vertebrae, the thoracic vertebral region of your spine. So that might be where some of that instability is, where that sprain is. We don't know the exact location. It could be someplace else. There's some other ligaments in there as well, but definitely looking at, you know, making sure there's some stability and mobility in a pain-free manner that's going to help him, you know, be fluid with his motions. Anytime it's back, you kind of worry about the pain spasm cycle, and that's, you know, if you've ever had back spasms before, they're not fun. But what happens in that pain spasm cycle is something causes the spasm, which increases the tension in the muscles, which increases the likelihood of spasm because it's trying to release it, which increases the tightness, which increases the pain, and so it's just this vicious cycle. And so a lot of times to break that pain spasm cycle, you've got to find the underlying cause, in this case, a sprain, to ensure that he's not in that pain spasm cycle and you're able to do kind of the other things that need to be done. So it's not one that necessarily generally results in a prolonged period of time, but it's definitely one that, I'll be keeping an eye on to make sure that it's not reoccurring.
Sure. I think he missed three games. He's back the other night, played just 13 minutes. Now they're going to ideally have more of a workload for him, but again, like with Ty, it'll come back to what he can tolerate, how he is feeling. Last thing I wanted to wrap up with you, Bruce Brown missed about 2 weeks with a right knee bone bruise. It's something he said started feeling in early December, kind of played through it for 2 or 3 weeks through the in-season tournament, something he says goes back to even the off-season, just from not really getting much time off after winning a championship and going into quickly into the off-season. So to me, that suggests kind of an overuse. Thus, they tried to find a two-week window for him to sit out, and probably just something you continue to monitor.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people think contusion and they think of like a simple bruise. And it's not the case, and especially if it's a bone contusion, we're talking about damage to the bone. Now, the key for me is where on the knee does that occur? If it's the kneecap, that can be tricky because your kneecap is mobile. It moves, right? We've all looked down and kind of mess around with our kneecap, right? It moves around in spots. Mm-hmm. And if the bruise itself is in a particular spot, that's going to potentially complicate the healing process, because every time he bends that knee, it's kind of like picking at a scab, right? You're irritating that area that is trying to heal. And the way you heal a bone injury is just like the way you heal a fracture. Even if it is a contusion, new bone tissue has to be laid down, and that takes time. Now, the good news is bone bruises can heal. Bone tissue is really good at returning to its original strength, unlike muscles like we talked with Tyrese. So it requires time. So I think the big thing here is, where is that bone bruise and how do they find that balance of letting him do movements and loads, just like with Tyrese, but also in a way that's not going to delay and prolong the healing process. And that's, we don't know that based on just the kind of nondescript bone contusion term, but again, sure, more complex than some people think of when they think of bone bruise or the word bruise.
Fantastic, Jeff. Thanks so much for the time. You know you're my go-to source, many of our go-to sources, whenever someone we cover gets injured. So appreciate the thorough details here.
Happy to help, man.
My thanks again to Jeff Stotts. My thanks to you for listening and continuing to consume the content that I create for you and Pacer fans everywhere. That will do it for this episode of the Fieldhouse Files podcast. Happy New Year, and I'll talk to you again soon.